So this week is Parshas Chukas, and the main event of this week's Parsha is the Pora Aduma, the red heifer, that we're commanded to find a heifer which is completely red, that doesn't have two hairs of another color on its entire body. And the Skan Kohen, one of the Kohanim, takes this and slaughters it outside Yerushalayim or in the wilderness, and we burn this down to ashes, and into the burning carcass of this heifer throw hyssop and red wool, and then the whole thing is reduced to ashes, and then these ashes are thrown onto a spring of water, and they're gathered and collected. And then if somebody comes in touch with death, either they actually touch a dead body, or they touch a sword or something that killed a dead body, or they're in a house in which there's a dead body, or a hospital or whatever, or they go into a graveyard and stand over a grave, they somehow become imbued with this tumor, this death residue, and in order for them to become fully alive again, we have to count 3 days from their contact with the dead body, and take a little bit of the ashes of this red heifer and mix it with water from the spring and sprinkle it on them, and then again on the seventh day, and then they go to mikveh, and at night they become tahor. And the other main event, so to speak, of this week's Seder is the death of Miriam, and subsequently the lack of water for the Jewish congregation in the wilderness. So the water was the be'er, the well that we had in the wilderness is associated with Miriam, and we've talked many times about the significance of the connection with Miriam and water. So over the years, we've discussed the Ishbitzer Torah, that the Pora Aduma, the red heifer, represents Chayim Mevurorim. It represents life, the life force in its most tangible manifestation, that the red, this pure, really vivid red cow, which had never had any kind of yolk on it and had no blemish anywhere on its skin, body, in its eyes or legs, or it was perfect in every way. It was 2 years old. It was in really perfect shape, right? And in all the cultures of the world, this cow represents the life force, and we take it somehow to represent the living. We reduce it to its elemental components, to its ashes, to the stuff of which it's made. You know, a little bit of nitrogen, a little bit of carbon and calcium, and a few metals. You know, some potassium, some ashes. Basically, we reduce it to its ashes, and to all intended purpose, it's dead. And if you were to taste it, it would taste dead, taste like ashes. And in it, somehow, is the secret of fixing death, and that somehow, in this dead thing, there is still life. And you know, what is life? We've talked when we were learning Sefer Yetzirah that life is, when we talk about Elohim Chai, the living God, what do we mean? We mean that God who projects himself, so to speak, outwards and allows some kind of a process, evolution, some kind of a connection the God who wants to be involved in some kind of process. So we are the process, the world is the process, and God's choice to be in process, that is what we call the living God. So there's a Gemara. The Gemara says that the souls of the living are in God's hands. Asher biyodei nefesh kol chai. In God's hands are the souls of every living thing. So where are the souls of the dead? So the Gemara says they're munachim bo'itzar. They're in some kind of a chamber, a treasure house. They're stored. They're in storage. What does it mean? What does that really mean? You know, how could there be a difference for God between the living and the dead? Well, what could that mean? Why would the living be in the hand of God, whereas the dead are in storage? And what is it? Some kind of, you know, cosmic cryogenics? And the Ishbitza says that there's no difference to God whether you and I are alive or dead. We're as imminent and as close and as connected to God when we're alive as when we're dead. There's no difference. The difference is in us and in our perception. That you and I, we can experience ourselves and God in closeness, that we think that our death means that we're no longer able to be that close in that way. And our experience is that death is something that cuts us off. And that's both our fear and it's also our perception. So death is a symbol of that which takes us away from the face-to-faceness of the divine in us. So if I'm dead, means I cannot access my own nesham. I, the person, the personality, can no longer find inside myself the living God. So I feel like, so then what does that mean if I'm no longer face to face with God? I would ask everybody to make sure that they've pressed *6 because there's a loud noise on the line. So the son of the Ishbitza, the Nois Desha, he asks some amazing questions. And to give you a background, Rashi in this week's Sedra says this week's parsha's Yofen Edreshes Rabbeinu Moshe Hadarshan has got some really good drash on this week's Sedra, because this week's Sedra begins with the phrase Zois Chukas HaTorah. This is the statute of the Torah, and it's very rare that the Torah refers to itself in advance as about to unveil a chukah, a statute. So the Medrash says Chukah Chukakti. God says this is a statute, meaning it's a law without any meaning, and I've carved it, because the word choik also means to carve. I ator reshoi laharer achreo. You have no permission to ask the meaning of this law. And again, I would ask everybody to press *6. Al ze omar shloim hamelech. And it's about this law that King Solomon says, Omarati echkemo, I said that I would be clever, v'hi rechoyko memeni, but it's too, the chochma, I'm finding it very distracting, the noise. I don't know, does anybody else find it very distracting? So, Reb Moshe Hadarshan says, the meaning of the Pora Aduma, this whole story, is a fixing of the worshipping of the golden calf. And it gives a mashal that there was a woman who was serving in the palace, and her child makes a mess on the floor, so they say to her, come and clean up. So the agel, this calf, is like the child, so let the mother, the cow, come and clean up. So the the implication is that the Pora Aduma, this red heifer, is the fixing of the sin of the worshipping the golden calf. So there's a few problems with this. First of all, you told us, Chukah Chukakti, that this is a statute and nobody has permission to ask about it and to give opinions and to say this is the reason. And then you go and you give a reason taken from Reb Moshe HaDarshan, which is actually comes from the Medrash. The second question, which is even better question, is that the Pora Aduma, really, the law of the Pora Aduma was given at the same time that Shabbos was given, which is in Mora, which is when we came out of Egypt. We'd only been out of Egypt a few days, a week, and already we're given these dinim before we ever got to Sinai. So if we are given the Pora Aduma, the laws of the red heifer and the Tahara, before we got to Sinai, then it's definitely before we worshipped the gold calf. So why then are you saying that this is a kapora, that this is the fixing of this, if it comes before, it doesn't come afterwards? And also, we are told that the Mishkan, the dedication of the tabernacle of the temple, that it came in the second year after we left Egypt, that was the fixing of the gold calf, that V'osu l'migdash, God said, make me a sanctuary, v'shachanti b'seichom, and I will dwell inside them. That was the fixing. So if that's the case, why do I then need another fixing? There's an interesting medrash this week. The medrash says, Omer Reb Yehoshua de Sichnin b'shem Reb Levi. Reb Yehoshua de Sichnin says in the name of Reb Levi, Al kol dova v'dova shehoi oima HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, about everything that God was talking to Moshe, oima loy tumosi v'taharosi. God would always give Moshe, whenever he was talking to him, he would tell him, and this is this kind of tumah, and this is this kind of tahara. This, you go to the mikveh, and this, you wait 7 days, and then you go to the mikveh, and everything that God explained to Moshe, he would always say to him, and this thing makes a person tamei, but this is how they become tahor. Then, when they're going through Leviticus, we come to Emor el HaKohanim, and there in the parasha of Emor el HaKohanim, God says to Moshe that the Kohen himself must not become tamei. The Kohen has to be careful not to come in touch with death. So Kivin Shigia la Pashas Emoy la Kohen Emoy Moshe. So Moshe says to God, Rabbeinu Shiloh, the master of the universe, Im Nitmazer, what happens if the Kohen does become tamei? Bema tehe tohorosoi. The Kohen is the one who provides for everybody kapora, cleaning, cleansing, somebody does something and they feel dirty, you go to the Mishkan and you bring an offering and so forth. So the Kohen is the one who provides everybody with the cleansing. So the Kohen himself, what does he do if he needs cleansing? Loi heshivoy. So God doesn't answer Moshe. So the Medrash says, Bo'osoy sho'o, at that time, Niskarchumu ponov shel Moshe. Moshe's face went very red. And he couldn't understand why God is not answering him like he normally does. Am I not worthy of a reply? Kivan shehigia leparshas Pora Aduma. When they get to the parsha of Pora Aduma, when they get to this chapter, Omele HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to Moshe, Bo'osu sho'o shemati l'cho'emoy l'koyanim, at that time when I was talking to you about what you're supposed to tell the Kohanim priest about not becoming Tomei, v'yomartali, you said to me, imnitmo, but if he does become Tomei, b'matei torosei, how's he going to get clean again? V'loy heshavticho, I didn't answer you. Now, zu tohorosui. Now I'm going to answer you. V'lokhu latomei me'efes refes hachatos. And he quotes, God quotes to Moshe, this parasha that they should take for that Kohen who became tamei from the ashes of the burned heifer. So, the son of the Ishbitzer, the Noistesh, says, why? What is this going? What's this drama here that God waits until now to tell Moshe to answer a simple question. So he says like this. There are two inyans, I'm not even sure how to explain, but there are two levels of the mitzvah of Shabbos. There's the mitzvah of Shomer, guard, and the mitzvah of guarding Shabbos is a mitzvah of din. It's a mitzvah of judgment and all kinds of boundaries. And then there's the mitzvah of Zocher es Yom HaShabbos, to remember Shabbos. And the remembering of Shabbos is all to do with Chesed. So, Shomer, to guard, means also to wait on. Like with Yaakov, it says, Va'oviv Shomer Sadova, when he was waiting to see what would happen with Joseph's dreams, it says his father guarded, meaning that he held on to the memory and he anticipated. So when we're in anticipation, we were learning in Sefer Yetzirah, anticipation of the future is always associated with fear and din. So there's the anticipation of Shabbos, and then there's the memory of Shabbos. Zocher and Shomer. The Shomer of Shabbos, the guarding of Shabbos, we were given long before Matan Torah. Before we got to Sinai, we were already told when the Shabbos, when we came out of Egypt, and we didn't have anything to eat, and the man came down. You know, that was the first Shabbos, and that's when we were given the laws of guarding Shabbos. The laws of remembering Shabbos, that's were given at Sinai. So there's two aspects of a mitzvah. There's the din, the halacha, the way, the do's and the don'ts. And then there's the taste of the mitzvah. That's the zocher, that's the chesed. And the same thing is with the parasha of Pora Adumo. The din, the law of Pora Adumo, that we were given at the same time when we came out of Egypt, we were given the laws. And at that time, Moshe Rabbeinu already said to God, you know, how does the Kohen become Tahor? How does the Kohen get fixed when he becomes Tamei? What did Moshe mean? I mean, why should a Kohen be different? See, the halacha is, the Gemara says, Kohanim Zrizim. The Kohen, he's very fast. And, you know, if we could go back into the temple, whether it's the Mishkan in the wilderness, or if we could go back to the temple, to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and see the way that the Kohanim used to do the avodah, the service. Kohanim Zerizim, you know, they were so fast. Their fingers would move so fast, and they were so adept at what they did that literally you couldn't see their fingers move. They were so fast at what they did. And their practice, their spiritual practice, was centered around Zerizus, which means speed, swiftness, care, caution, right? And nobody ever saw a Kohen making a Keli tummy. You know, they were so good at what they did that the Kohanim did not make things tummy. And they didn't, there were practices in the temple that, you know, if you and I, we were to have something holy, you know, some of the food from the korban, some of the holy sacrifices that we took with us home and we ate at home, like the korban Pesach and stuff like that, we had so many little fences to make sure that we didn't make anything tummy, and how we inspected ourselves and made sure that we were clean, and the Kohanim, they just took this for granted. They were so zariz. They were so careful in everything that they did. So, in a sense, God doesn't have to answer Moshe about Kohen. The Kohen doesn't become Tamei. The Kohen, the whole nature of the Kohen is that he is careful, super careful, hyper careful, not to become tummy. Moshe didn't understand that the reason that he's not being answered is because, in a sense, no Kohen had ever become tummy. When Moshe Rabbeinu is given the parasha of Emor el HaKohanim, speak to the Kohanim, Lenefesh lo yitamo, there never was a chance for a Kohen to become tummy because they were so careful. But something changed here. Something changed here in this parsha, and to understand what's happened here is the connection between the red heifer and the death of Korach. Something happened to Moshe and Aaron. They became tummy, and they're really the first Kohanim to become tummy. And Moshe is a Kohen here in the sense that, this is his red heifer, right? The Gemara says there were seven, and one of them is the one of Moshe, and Moshe is not a Kohen Godo, but the Nois Tosha asks, why do we call this the Parah of Moshe? Moshe didn't actually make this red heifer. The job was given to Elazar, the son of Aaron. Why is this called the Parah of Moshe? And in fact, the Gemara says that something was left over from the ashes of Moshe's Parah that was added to every subsequent Parah until the destruction of the Second Temple, just 2,000 years. So for over 1,500 years, there was something of the ashes of Moshe's Parah. But why is it called Moshe's Parah if he didn't make it? And the answer is because he didn't make it, but it was made for him. Because something happens, and this is why this week's Seder is also connected to the death of Miriam. We were learning that when we said to Aaron, when Moshe was in the mountain, and we said, "Aseilonu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu," make us gods that will walk in front of us. We were really rejecting Moshe Rabbeinu's Judaism. We were saying we don't want this kind of Judaism where you've got this rabbi who goes up to heaven and it brings us down the law. This is not what we want. It's not what we need. We want Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu. We want gods that will walk in front of us. We said to Aaron, we want you to be the priest. We want you to be the one who connects us with this God that we can look at, and so we go through this process, the golden calf. And as we were learning all through the end of the book of Exodus, all those parashas that dealt with the golden calf and then the making of the tabernacle, that in fact God nods to us and says it will be like you say, and instead of being punished, We get what we want, right? So God says, "V'asu li migdash, make me this sanctuary. V'shechanti b'sam, I'm going to come down, dwell right on earth." And Aaron, he's going to be the Kohen, not Moshe. There's something of that. The Nois Tosha says that primal sin of worshipping the gold calf, which we are told that there's nothing that happens in Judaism, no sin that doesn't contain within it some of that. There's no punishment there's nothing that happens to us in history that isn't somehow also a response to the sin of the golden calf, And we were taught that it's like saying that when God punishes us, he also punishes us. He says, "Oh, I still owe you for the golden calf. Here, let me give you some patch for that also," right? The Ishbitz understands it just the opposite, right? There's no sin, there's no mistake that we make that doesn't contain within it something of the mistake of the golden calf, which, as we've gone to such great lengths to learn, was a mistake which we're supposed to make. And so the Medrash says, God says, this is Medrash, very interesting, he says, in there it's talking right at the beginning of Shmois Rabbah. She'ani yored betetra mulin shili. God says to Moshe, I'm going to be coming down from heaven betetra mulin with my four mules. There was a kind of chariot that was drawn by four mules that were harnessed side by side, not two pairs, but side by side. V'shoymtin achaz mehem, and then what are the Yidden going to do? They're going to take one of the mules, umachisin oisebi, and they're going to annoy me with it. And he was referring to that God is going to come down from heaven with his chariot, which has got four faces on the four sides, and the Yidden are going to take one of the faces and annoy me, which is the one, which is the ox, right, which is the Egel, that was the gold calf, right. And if you look in the book of Ezekiel, where it gives the vision of the chariot, it says Pnei Shor Mismoil, that the face of the bull is on the left side. So really, what we were trying to do when we were worshipping the gold calf is we were trying to take the left side and change it for the right side. And you know what Korach was trying to do, as we were saying last week, that Aaron represents Chesed, which is the right side, and Korach represents the left side. And he was trying to show that the left side has ascendancy, is more important than the right side. And he was saying, he refused to be surrounded by Aaron. You know, Aaron is the chesed that wraps everything. And Korach says, no, it's the other way around. It's the gevurah that wraps the chesed. If not for my gevurah, if not for my avoida, if not for my worship of God, which through my worship I bring the light out of the darkness, if not for my avoidance doing that, the world wouldn't work. It would just be this abundance, overabundance of light, which is the chesed, and everything would just like dissolve, right? I am the gevura, I am the keli, and the vessel into which the light flows, which and the vessel is so powerful that it can contain the light and reflect it back, and that's the Levi, and that's the Gevura, and so forth. And that's what his fight with Aaron was about who has ascendancy. And as we were saying, that Korach, part of Korach's mistake is that he can see that it's time to go into Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael there's a different, the world runs in different rules than it runs in the wilderness. You know, the Nois Desha says that here with the death of Miriam in this week's parasha, what we're really learning is that things did change. That Aaron and Moshe and Miriam, that they have to pass, they have to leave the world in order for a new order to come in, for young people to take over. And really, Korach was tuned in to the changing of the guard. And we were terrified of the changing of the guard. And in a sense, we were bewildered. You know, the Medrash says that, you know, when Esav's a big Rosh, Esav's the big, the wicked man and so forth, when did he really go bad? It was the day that Avraham Avinu died. On the day that Avraham Avinu died, Esau says, "In poga midas adin bezeh, if judgment, if the withholding or whatever it is, like if Avraham can be snatched away and killed by God, then what chance do we have? And leis din." Veles dying. There can't be any justice. There can't be any. He can't be real. Nothing is real. And that's the day that he went out and he became who he became. It was on the day that Avraham died. And the Ishbitzer says that there's something of Esau's response in all of us when we are faced with an ultimate judgment like death. And when Aaron and Moshe died, this whole thing was compounded for us in a way that we couldn't understand. And Moshe and Aaron die because they've become tamei. How have they become tamei? You know, the job of the kohen is to wrap everything in chesed, meaning that the kohen helps us to understand how even in the worst thing that we do, you know, we're always connected to God. You know, the last job of the kohen is to bring down into the world some kind of an accusation against a yid. I mean, that's the opposite of his job, right? The job of the kohen is always with simcha, because the kohen, one of the reasons he's not allowed to come in touch with death, we were learning, is because he's the tabach, he's the chief party organizer for God. And so God says to him, you know, you're in charge of the barbecue and stuff. Your job is not to get involved with the politics and the death and the dying, and you need to stay happy, and that's your job, right? And so the kohen is not allowed to go to funerals and so forth, and the kohen gadol, the high priest, not even in his own family is allowed. How did it come about that Aaron brings about the death of Korach? You know, Korach is, he was the Rebbe of all the Levites, and even though he was the one who picked the fight, Aaron didn't pick a fight with Korach, but still, Aaron and Moshe between them are responsible for the death of Korach. So when Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, Imnitmo b'mata harosoi, when the kohen becomes tamei, with what is he going to become purified? God didn't answer him because it was a hypothetical question. No kohen became tamei in the wilderness till Moshe and Aaron became tamei. They themselves become tamei. They become tamei at the story of Korach, and here the Ishbitzer says, we come back to the parallel between Korach, and the Egel, the worshipping of the gold calf, that both of them are an attempt to change the place of the left of the dark side. And it's now when Moshe and Aaron, and you know, who made the Egel, right? Aaron made the ego. That's a metaphor. Aaron making the ego is the metaphor for the mother whose child, you know, soils the palace. So the Jewish people have all been forgiven for the worshipping of the golden calf. That was with the dedication of the tabernacle. But Aaron himself, where does his purification come from? And that remained in abeyance. We couldn't see where Aaron's purification, where his tahara comes from. And that's why Aaron doesn't make the red heifer. He's not involved at all, because you know, he's the other side, he's the flip side. We have a law in the Torah, you know, the Kohen is not allowed to make himself tummy in order to prevent somebody else becoming tummy. We don't say to somebody, you sin in order to somebody else should have a mitzvah. There's no such thing in the Torah that we tell one person to do an avera so the other person should have a mitzvah. So how come we tell the kohen who makes the red heifer to make himself tummy in order to bring about the burning of the red heifer? Because that's one of the great mysteries, that everybody who deals with the red heifer becomes tummy. Only the person who's being sprinkled, he gets his tahara. Everybody else becomes tummy, starting with the person who burns the red heifer, to the one who collects the ashes, to the one who carries the ashes, to the one who sprinkles the ashes. They all become tummy. Only the person who's getting sprinkled becomes tahara. So the Ishbitzer says, I really, what this is telling us is that the whole story with Korach that we were learning last week, it's another reading of the Egel story. And just as the Egel story was really God nodding to us, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu's kind of Judaism is beautiful and is the highest, but it's going to be replaced by another kind, which is a tabernacle where I come down to rest, and we have these physical rituals, and we have the Kohen, and we have all this grand theater, which is really what you want, God says to us. And here, with the ritual of the red heifer, what we're being told is that Korach brought about a new order also, in which there's a breakthrough from what we consider the dark side, that there is a connection everybody can see between what is lost and what is not lost, and that in fact death is the ultimate illusion and pain is the illusion, and that our narrative is the illusion. The problem is, I can understand it intellectually. If you tell me that everything that happens to me in my life, and my father's life, and my grandfather's life, that, you know, all just the 20th century history alone, just one century, that all the millions and the Holocaust, everything, it's an illusion, right? It's an illusion. No Yid was ever in pain. No Yid was ever in danger. You tell me this, and you say to me, this is what the Ishbitzer explains, and this is how we learn the Me'er Shiloach every year, that history is going to be, we're going to see, it's going to be like with Joseph and his brothers, that they thought they'd ruined the whole world, they'd killed their brother Joseph, and then Shimon had been taken prisoner, and now Benjamin was going to be taken prisoner, and Jacob was going to die, and God was going to, they caused so much cosmic damage, God was going to have to bring the world back to void and chaos and start again, because they'd ruined so much. And how much pain they had, and how much regret and anguish while they're standing there in front of, bewildered in this palace surrounded by Egyptian soldiers and this implacable enemy, the man wearing this gold mask shouting at them, you're spies, you're this, you're cheats, you're thieves. And then the next minute, it's Yosef. Hey, it's Yosef. It's their brother. They never killed him. Oh, Shimon's here. Binyamin's here. Their father's overjoyed, right? So, for us, we're going to realize we were never in danger, we were never in pain. The Ishbitz explains that that's an analogy of what God is going to show us, and that's really what the red heifer is trying to tell us, that death is an illusion, the cow is an illusion, the living cow and the dead cow are all just fluctuations in the field. That, you know, if you look at a carbon atom, you know, you cannot tell that the carbon atom is inside a living cow or a dead cow. It's the same carbon atom. So then, you know, how is one bit of carbon taste like a steak and the other carbon tastes like ashes? It's all an illusion. There's just the carbon atoms, and even if you look at the carbon atoms, they're not even there. It's just, they're just a fluctuation in the field as well, you know, and so forth. Everything's an illusion. But I can know that intellectually, but can I taste it? I can't taste it. There's a difference between knowing something and being able to taste it, and that's what the Pura Aduma is there. You know, there's L'cho, God says, L'cho ani migale tam, to you, Moshe, I'm going to show you the taste of the Pura Aduma, because you were not there by the worshipping of the golden calf. The only one of us who wasn't on earth, he wasn't even on earth when it was happening, was Moshe. So he's never caught up in the illusion of death. He's never caught up in the illusion of the Yetzirah and the evil inclination and all the stuff that we got wrapped up in and we're still wrapped up in. Moshe Rabbeinu, he can taste the death inside the life and the life in the death. It's all the same. It's all an illusion. Like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, somebody came to him, the Medrash says, and said to him, Rabbi, you know, this business you do with the golden calf, you know, this is like pure magic. This is not Judaism. This is like, this is a conjuring. You take a calf, you kill it, you burn it. Then you somebody comes who's tummy and, you know, you sprinkle this stuff on him. This is heebie-jeebie stuff. This is where, how does this come into Judaism? And he said to him, look, when somebody gets really ill and they get possessed by some kind of a bad spirit, what do? You take a little bit of that staff, that sage, and then you burn it under his nose and you wave it around, and then the evil spirit goes out and it chases it away. It's the same thing. It's just medicine. You know, that paradum is medicine. So the man left and he said, oh, you're right. And then the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they said to him, Rebbe, that makes you the chakta oisei bekone, you took a reed and you fobbed him off with this reed, but us, you can't fob off with a reed. Tell us, what is the meaning of Pura Aduma? And he says to them, loy shehames metame. Death doesn't make a person tummy. Veloisheha efa metahar. And the ashes don't make a person tahor. It's all an illusion. This is death and life. It's an illusion. We're all caught up in it. It's a chukah. That's the meaning of the statute. The thing is that if you access the Moshe Rabbeinu in you, if you access the chokhmah, v'yikru elecho, the Ishbitzer says, God says to Moshe, every yid, in order to be able to taste this and not just to know this, has to take to the Moshe Rabbeinu inside you. Every one of us has Moshe Rabbeinu inside us. And the Moshe Rabbeinu inside us is never there. We were never even there at the story of the golden calf. We were in heaven. And we're still in heaven. And if we access that part of us which wasn't even there by the worshipping of the gold calf, we can taste in our own mouth the taste of what it felt like to be there when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. And if you'd have said to Yaakov Avinu when he came down to Egypt, oi, that must have been terrible. He would say, it was nothing. It was nothing. What do you mean? All those years when Yosef, it was nothing. And that's how we are going to feel like, you know, when we finally get it. It was nothing. Nothing. Shkoyach.